And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hey everyone, all of our like zero followers that are not listening to this, but you know, we're going. Welcome to another episode of our adventure through the MCU. And today, as we mentioned yesterday, we are blasting off into outer space.
Wait, we said this yesterday?
Hmm?
We said this yesterday? Don't you mean like last week?
You know what? Yes, last week, last time, whatever. Yesterday.
Many moons ago, we said we're going to blast off into space.
Four score and seven days ago, Michael and I set forth on this great adventure, and we talked about the Winter Soldier. Today, we are continuing this adventure, but in outer space, with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think it should be noted that Guardians of the Galaxy is the first movie of the MCU that's not going after the big leagues. Like, this is not a Spider-Man film. This is not an Iron Man sequel, nor a Thor sequel, or Captain America sequel, which was guaranteed to make box office. This is a risk. This is a relatively unknown property. Only the comic book nerds really knew it. It's not like everybody knew Captain America or Spider-Man or Iron Man or whatever. These are the Guardians of the Galaxy. And everybody went, huh? Kind of similar to what we have going on with the Eternals, but I think it's more so with the Eternals, because even the comic book fans are like, where did you scrape this from?
But the great thing is, though, is that it's written and directed by James Gunn, who his previous superhero film was the movie Super, starring Rainn Wilson, Kevin Bacon, Ellen Page, and Liv Tyler, and Michael Rooker. So there's a little connection there with Michael Rooker. Which, by the way, obviously Guardians under the Disney umbrella, PG-13, super hard R rating. Oh, and Nathan Fillion's in there as a holy superhero. It's really funny.
I will have to check it out.
I recommended that you check this out before we recorded this episode.
I forgot. Okay. I've been busy. So we start in 1988, actually.
Was it 1988?
Yeah, it's time stamped.
Oh, yeah. And I just watched it over the weekend too, and I can't even remember that.
So we open on Earth in 1988, where a young boy is sitting in a chair in a hospital and is listening to his Walkman. His name is Peter, and his grandfather comes out and tells him that his mom wants to talk to him.
Do we know for a fact that that's actually his grandfather?
Yes. They mention it later in the next scene.
Gotcha.
So his mom is in the hospital bed. She's like surrounded by friends and relatives, and we kind of understand that Peter's a very sensitive child. Like, he got in a fight with boys because they like killed a frog. Like, this is a precious baby. And so his mom says that, you know, he's a lot like his father, and that dad was an angel of light or something like that. And the family's looking like, oh God, she's still going on about this. Like, it was just a one-night stand, like, let it go. And so mom gives Peter a present, which is a card and a box. And she says to open it when she's gone. And that Peter's going to go and live with grandpa, and basically like the rest of the family's still there. So he's staying with his grandfather until the dad that like allegedly exists will come back for him one day. And so she reaches out like, take my hand, Peter, take my hand. And like, poor Peter's just like scared out of his wits, and then things get complicated and mom starts literally dying.
And then actually dies.
And Peter in his grief runs away from the hospital, and his grandfather's calling after him. And then all of a sudden,
His grandfather took him out of the room.
The grandfather took him out of the room, and then he runs off.
Yeah.
So he comes outside, and there is a spaceship. And that's all we get. And there's like a light.
And it just takes him from a random field that's in front of the hospital.
I mean, it was like Kentucky or Kansas or someplace with fields.
True.
Isn't Peter from somewhere like that? I don't remember from the comics. I never read Guardians of the Galaxy.
I don't remember. I didn't read the comics either. The only Guardians related comic that I've read is the Drax run that was written by CM Punk.
The only time I've gotten close was when I was reading stuff with Philavel and Moondragon really briefly, and then all of the Kree Skrull War stuff in time for Empire.
Well, the great thing about the Drax run by CM Punk is that even though he didn't do it on purpose, he indirectly made the Drax to be like Batista, who actually played him in the movie, because Batista is going into the WWE Hall of Fame for everything that he did in professional wrestling. CM Punk is best friends with Batista from their time when they're both in the WWE together. So it was actually really funny how the two correlated, even though Punk said that he didn't write it based off Batista, even though everyone looked at it and went, this is really based off Batista as the character played in the movies. So,
yep.
A little comic book reference there for you, people that are listening to us. All negative six of you.
Well, we'll talk about comic book references. So a man in a mask walks through the rubble and he enters. So we actually come, we're about 26 years later on a planet called Morag, which is an abandoned planet. And we later find out this is the home of one of these little weird funky things that everybody's after.
Infinity Stones.
Yes.
I mean, it was already referenced as the Infinity Stones going into at the end of Thor Dark World.
Well, here's the thing about Thor Dark World. The after credit scene is them delivering the reality stone to the collector.
And Ray Stevenson's character goes, and it's not wise to have two Infinity Stones in the same place.
No, yes, I know that the term Infinity Stone has already been used. That's not what I'm talking about. I was going to build up about this magical rock thing that everybody's after, and boom, it's an Infinity Stone, but you were in that, so thank you. Thank you.
Well, don't worry. You can have your moment in the next episode when we talk about Age of Ultron.
I'm going to have 12% of that moment?
You're going to have about 60% of that moment.
Okay.
Which depletes as time goes on.
So we see that there's this guy, and he's like arriving on this planet and he's looking for something. And there's something cool, like purple glowing thing. And so this guy who we kind of assume is kind of a, you know, he takes off his helmet, he's listening to a Walkman, and we just kind of assume it's Peter. And he is trying to get this purple thing.
Purple.
But a ship also arrives with a guy who was working for Ronan, and he arrives to get the stone.
Get to that part, let's talk about Peter, who we end up finding later on is Peter doing that lovely dance.
Oh, there's a lot of dancing in this movie. Kevin Bacon would be proud.
Especially with all the Kevin Bacon references.
Which is why I just made that reference. And you were talking about Super before, which has Kevin Bacon in it. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Does James Gunn have a crush on Kevin Bacon?
I don't know if he has a crush on Kevin Bacon, but I could see why.
So there's a kind of like this dorky little music video. He like takes like one of those like alien look, like these little alien creatures, and just like sings into it like a microphone. It's a pretty fun scene.
And then when it gets revisited later, it makes it even more funny.
So Peter gets this weird rock-looking thing, and he gets...
Like a spear. More like a spear.
No. It's just a ball.
Yeah, I know, but we don't know what's inside of it at the time.
Right! Yeah. I'm just calling it a random ball right now.
Hooray, random ball.
Okay, so as he grabs it, somebody else has his gun pointed at Peter, and he's like, oh, Ronan, this is BB, you know, this is for Ronan or whatever. And he's like, hey, like, I'm Peter, like, you can't just, like, I'm a Ravager, like, this is just what I do, this is just a hunk of junk. And he's like, well, maybe you know me by another name. Star-Lord. And he goes, who? So Peter creatively fights back, there's a chase, he gets away, and he has his own ship. But the girl he slept with, because he's a classy guy, is still there, on the ship. He forgot she was there. So as we learn,
how bad does that have to make the rest of that trip for wherever they have to go? Like, how would you feel? Like, let's just use us. How would you feel if I go on some adventure, I completely forget that you're in the car, and then I come back to the car and you're like, what the hell?
Well, there, first of all, there wouldn't be a ride back for you. Let's be real here.
but still, how awkward does that have to be?
Very.
Yeah.
So.
But she does get her revenge, if we want to call it that.
Does she though?
When Michael Rooker, Mando.
Yondu,
yep. I don't know why I was thinking the Mandalorian for a second, but yeah, Yondu. When Yondu calls, and she's like, Peter, you have call. It's like, no, don't get...
Shoot. Yeah, so there's a call from Yondu. Yondu's like, where the hell are you, kid? I'm gonna get you.
Wow, that sounded wrong. It's like, I'm gonna get you, kid.
Anyway, so Yondu... Oh, no. So we get some context before that. So the Kree Empire and Xandar, or the Nova Corps that rules Xandar or whatever, make a peace. That's really surprising based on how the Kree operate in the comics. So kudos to Xandar. They get bonus points. But not everybody's happy with the piece. That's when we get to Ronan, but we'll get to that. So Peter takes something from... So apparently Peter took something from the Ravagers, which is, I guess, his ship. And there's, like, a code amongst the Ravagers, and Yondu's not happy. So Yondu is the one that picked up Peter. And then it's revealed that Ronan is this, like, Kree fanatic psycho who doesn't like the peace because I guess Xandar and the Kree have been fighting for a while and like boo-hoo-hoo. And he wants the stone. We're not really given a reason yet why he wants the stone, this orb thing, device, whatever, but he wants it. He wants it badly. He's like a 5-year-old who can't get his toy. Correction. I actually have a very specific description here. Ronan, Kree wackadoodle, zealot, obeys ancient Kree laws. He really is a wackadoodle. So he kills his Xandarian prisoner. It's like, if this was an R rating, that would be a really gruesome death because he just kind of like chops his head off.
No, he bashed his head in.
Or bashed his head in, and it's like, yeah, a pool of blood that like follows. Ugh.
Yeah, because his key weapon is that massive battle hammer, essentially.
Yeah. So then we meet Nebula, who is blue and cranky, and we find out that Peter's going to see somebody called some broker guy
on Xandar.
On Xandar, and we learned that Ronan is getting the stone for Thanos, who we very briefly saw in that after credit scene in Avengers. Or the first after credit scene, excuse me. So the deal is Ronan gives Thanos the stone, Thanos destroys Xandar. But I guess to make sure that Ronan holds up his end of the deal, Thanos basically loaned out his daughters, Nebula and Gamora. So he's about to send Nebula to go and get the stone on Xandar. But Gamora convinces Ronan that she's better qualified to do it because she knows Xandar. So she goes. As we turn into Xandar, we see this kind of narration about how stupid all these people are with their silly lives, and yada, yada, yada. And we see the Stanley cameo as Casanova, which I guess is not the original cameo they had in mind for him. I'm trying to remember there was like another cameo that they had in mind. And when I first read about it, I was like, oh, this would have been so much cooler. But I guess they didn't want Stanley to look like anything remotely negative in any way. So he ended up being Casanova.
Well, it's either that or it also just didn't work with what they were filming.
but I like my version better. So we kind of cut to this, like, it kind of sounds like bounty hunters that are looking for a bounty. And it's shown that this person that's speaking is actually a walking, talking, adorable raccoon named Rocket. And he has a friend who is a tree named Groot. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the cameo. So Stanley's cameo was originally going to be featured him as one of the collector's box trophies, who was giving Groot the middle finger.
And actually, that would be like this. Okay, first off, that does not show Stan Lee in a negative light. I think that would have been freaking hilarious.
Like, honestly, like, you could have done it without the, you know, the finger flip off. Like, just him in the collector's chambers would have been hysterical once we, and we'll explain why at the end. But alas, he ends up being Space Casanova.
But you got to admit, him being Space Casanova worked out well, too, because of the line that Rocket threw at him.
Something about him being, oh, go get your wife or something?
Like he pretty much called him, like, an old creep and stuff like that. So one way or the other, it still worked out. It was still funny.
It was.
Yeah.
So Rocket and Groot are basically bounty hunters, and they find a bounty.
Of Peter.
Of Peter. So Yondu takes out, like, a 40,000 unit bounty on Peter. So meanwhile, Quill brings the orb to the broker, who basically, like, once he hears that Ronan wants this, he, like, freaks out and doesn't want anything to do with this. So Quill then meets Gamora, and she takes the stone, then Peter goes after her. Basically, there's, like, this really fun, it's like, it's a chase scene, but it's also like, okay, who has the orb this time? Who has it next? And it just keeps changing hands and changing hands and changing hands. There's a fun moment where Groot and Rocket capture him, and they, like, put him in a bag. That was kind of funny. But anyway, Quill kind of escapes, then Rocket gets him, and at the end of this, they all get arrested. Because they're all criminals in one way or another. So, the Nova are then shown talking to the Kree about, like, you need to stop Ronan. He's, like, one of y'all. And yeah, the Kree guy's like...
Nova Prime.
Hmm?
It was Nova Prime.
Thank you. So Nova Prime, played by the beautiful and amazing Glenn Close, is like, you know, he's a zealot. He's a wackadoodle. You have to do something about him. And the Kree are like, yeah, he's your problem. We signed a treaty. What else do you want from us? And that is, like, the most epic, like, Kree response ever. Like, this is your problem, even though it's technically their problem. Just don't send him to the moon, okay? Comic book reference. Okay. So the not yet Guardians of the Galaxy get processed. Gamora's identified as a daughter of Thanos. So Rocket is, they have, like, a test subject name. He's result of extensive genetic and technical experimentations that were illegal. Groot is very obviously a humanoidish tree from a planet of tree people. And Quill is Terran, which is their word for Earth. And this scene was actually improvised by Chris Pratt, but the little machine and the finger flip, like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know how this machine worked. But it's such a great line. But they all get sent to a really, really corrupt maximum security prison. Like, holy fudge brownies. So they find out that, let's see. Quill calls Rocket a raccoon, which is what he is, and he's just like, what's a raccoon? Which is just funny. But they keep calling him rodent. I mean, you could call him a squirrel at this point.
Vermin.
Vermin, he gets called that too. Apparently, we find out Rocket is actually very sensitive. Like, he just needs a hug and a pet. Like, he would make somebody a really great pet.
Oh, look at the doggy.
We'll get to the doggy too. We also find out that Gamora Oh, Quill is basically here just to make 80s references. Like, he's useful, but he's mostly there for a bunch of 80s references. But we find out that Gamora was actually going to betray Ronan and not give the stone to Ronan or Thanos, and actually had a third party lined up. Quill gets pissed because I guess one of the like guards or something like takes his headphones, and he's also very sensitive about that because his mom gave him that. So he's
there's a lot of sensitivity.
Yeah,
in this film,
sensitive except Gamora. And they all just kind of like need hugs, and Peter really needs to deal with the loss of his mother because clearly after 26 years he has not dealt with it. So in the night, Rocket talks about how he's like escaped from 22 prisons and he's like not going to be here that long and yada, yada, yada. And everybody's like really, really vying to see Gamora. And by see, of course, we mean kill. So tonight in the...
No, before that, though, there's a proving point that's actually done as they're walking through the main mess hall of the prison after getting processed. Mm-hmm. You know, getting hosed down with that orange stuff, given their attire, their blanket, I guess. They're all walking through, and as you mentioned, a lot of the inmates are, like, making death threats towards Gamora.
Yep.
But you have this really big blue guy get in front of Peter and going, like, you're real nice. I wouldn't mind, like, you know, stick my meat on your fresh meat or something like that. To which then Groot turns his fingers into longer twigs right up the guy's nose, lifts him up,
right.
And then Rocket's like, this right here, this our booty. You know, you want to get to him, you got to get through us. Or as we really should say, we're going to go through you. Great. Yeah. And then Peter's just like, I'm with them.
Just like, who's going to argue with a giant tree that can kill you?
And then after this happens, Gamora gets into her cell, to which then, you know, they're all doing the threats to her while she's getting into her cell. The door shuts.
In the middle of the night, she's taken out of her cell.
As they go away, before all that, as they walk away from the cell, you finally see Drax for the first time.
Oh, that's right. And he's just kind of watching casually.
Then we get to your part.
All right, so they basically, a bunch of people take her out of her cell, accuse her of war crimes and horrible things and whatnot, and they're about to kill her when Dave Bautista's Drax comes in. So fun note about Dave Bautista, first of all, he's awesome, but he apparently cried when he found out that he got the role because he really, really wanted it, and he actually worked with like a coach to prepare and everything. He was just like over the moon, so good
because
for him.
Well, keep in mind at this time, Batista, I know him as Batista because he was a wrestler and that's how he went by. He just went by his last name. Batista came from the wrestling world. He had always been knocked. One of the biggest knocks on him was his work on the microphone. He was never the best, like, promo guy. And when he left WWE to pursue acting, you know, he got like little bits here, little bits there, but
yeah,
he really, really wanted, you know, to do something big like this, and getting like the work that he put in. And he also was poor. Like, this is a guy who made millions of dollars in WWE and became poor during a 2-year period trying to get into like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
So...
So Drax comes in and he's basically like, if anybody here has the right to kill her, it's me, because Ronan killed my family. Let's see. So Gamora demonstrates that she can basically take care of herself, and that she's actually the only hope in stopping Ronan and by extension Thanos. And they realize that Gamora's actually worth more alive than dead, so Quill kind of rescues her. So Rocket, Quill, Groot, and Gamora the next day come up with a plan. Because Gamora says not only does she have a third-party buyer, that buyer is fronting a pretty big bill for this rock thing.
Four billion credits. Everything's so different in every fantasy world. But yeah, so it was 4 billion units, and Rocket's like a Rocket originally is like, oh no, we're taking him to Yondu. We're getting our 40,000 unit bounty.
40,000, 4 billion.
And then like Peter's like, well, how much is your buyer wanting this thing for? And she goes, 4 billion. And Rocket's just like, forget the bounty. I want this. You know? Yeah. And then Groot hops in and goes, we split it four ways. Like, and that's a great line by Rocket where he goes, of course, sleep for all the action and still wants a cut.
So meanwhile, Ronan has a meeting with that guy that we saw that works for Thanos. That guy doesn't last long, but he's the one that was giving Loki his marching orders.
Yeah, I forget what his official title was.
Nah, not relevant. But Ronan kills him, Thanos is bored, and Nebula, it's shown that basically Thanos plays favorites, and Gamora is the favorite, because I'm sure she's over the moon about that, and Nebula's just like, I want my daddy's approval. The best part is Ronan is pouting and is cranky, and Thanos calls him basically a pouty child, and he literally pouts.
So he's Kylo Ren?
No, Kylo Ren is way more attractive and has less face paint.
Yes, but he is a pouty child, though.
True.
Yeah, that was the point I was making.
I feel like he's just a petulant, cranky child, whereas, like, Ronan is just pouty. Like, I want my orb. I want the inner destroyed. Okay.
Well, you could kind of say the same thing with Kylo Ren. I want that BB unit.
Granted, I haven't seen the last movie. I think they're all trash anyway, but Star Wars is overrated. Fight me. Except The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian is great. So Rocket, basically they come up, Rocket has a plan to escape. And so he needs like this guy's armband to control stuff. They need this like command box. And he says he needs some guy's leg for some reason. So Gamora goes out. So I actually love this scene because they're talking and Rocket is summing out the plan. And he's like, yeah, and then we need this thing. It's the junction box. It's at the top, but we should probably
get that. It's a battery.
It's a battery.
Yeah.
He says, we should probably get that last. Meanwhile, Groot had already gone. And in the background, as he's talking, he just like snatches the thing off.
Well, the greatest thing is he, as they're talking about it and Rocket is explaining why you should get it last because it shuts down and sets off all the alarms.
Yep.
As he's saying that, Groot rips off the cover, just chucks it, and hits a random inmate in the head and knocks him out. And then you see him grab the battery and pull it, and you just see the cord. And it's like a slinky. And he's just pulling it and pulling it and pulling it. And Drax just walks up and just starts staring at him.
Yep.
Drax is just like, what are you doing? And then finally rips it, and then everything goes to hell. And then Rocket's like, or we'll just get that first. Rocket has some of the best lines in the film.
He really does, though. So everybody splits up. So Quill goes to get that guy's leg, and Gamora gets this one of the security guards' armbands that like control stuff. Meanwhile, there's these like drones that are sent out that can do stuff. But I gotta pause here for a second and talk about Groot's design. Like, we can talk about it a little bit later, but like the detail on this tree is on point. It's so good. So Rocket berates Groot. He needs his stuff. So Drax joins in the fight against the guards. He gives Rocket a gun, which Rocket appreciates. Gamora gets the armband. Quill gets the leg. He also gets a blaster. So Rocket, they end up at this like little watchtower. Drax saves Quill. Groot sends guys out of the watchtower. Just like flings them out. And we find out that Rocket did not need the leg. Rocket is just an asshole. We also find out that Drax's people take everything literally. Rocket says, like, metaphors go over his head. And Drax says, nothing goes over my head. I am fast. I will catch it or whatever.
I have quick reflexes.
Whatever. It's such a funny line. And Drax is like, I like the concept of a literal character. It's kind of funny. So the guards bring out some big guns, but Rocket does is he turns off the gravity inside the inside the prison, the main part of the prison. And he used, and he also reprogrammed the droids from the Watchtower to be his, like, boosters, basically. So that the top of the Watchtower can be used as a teleportation, you know, travel device for briefly.
Oh, and it's kind of interesting how they do their countdowns. So, like, you know how, like, for us, we do, like when we do this recording, I always do recording 3, 2, 1, mark. And then we go in, which nobody hears because I always edit that part out. But the interesting thing is like, on my command, number one, and then they just fire. There is no countdown of, like, on my, you know, on my mark. It's just,
oh yeah,
one, boom. It's interesting.
So, meanwhile, so they're like, okay, so this is my ship, the Milano, because Alyssa Milano was, I guess, big in the 80s.
I thought she was big in the early 90s, not the late
80s. I only know her from Charmed, so.
And that's 90s.
It's late 90s, early 2000s, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he sends everyone to the ship, and he's like, here, take the orb, I'll be right back. Because they go to the, they gather all their stuff up, but Peter's Walkman is still missing. So he goes to get that.
They get to the ship. Gamora's like, all right, let's take a look. She looks in the sack, and then there's no orb. It's not
there. Like, Quill is the dumbest and smartest person at the same time, because he does so many stupid things, but he's actually very smart. Because logically, if he'd given them the orb, they would have just left without him.
Which is what Rocket wanted to do.
Exactly. But he kept the orb. So they escape. But this is like the island of misfit assholes. Like,
well, one of the great things is that like, they fly off, and then Quill obviously meets them there. And when Quill gets on the ship, like, Drax is like, you're one of the bravest men I've ever known. And then they find, is like, what did you retrieve? And he gives him the Walkman, and he goes, you're dumbest. You're an imbecile.
But again, like, Peter, there's also, like, the present from his mom that he has not opened yet, because Rocket finds it. So he's definitely still very much attached to the things. Like, it's revealed that the girl from the beginning was actually wearing the shirt that Peter was kidnapped in, meaning that Peter has kept everything from that day that he owns.
Yep.
Which is understandable. Rocket also made, like, a convenient bomb. But yeah, like I said, this is the island of misfit assholes. Nobody likes each other. Nobody has a reason to like each other or be friends with each other. And this is, like, they all hate each other. They just want to get their billion each units and leave. So Ronan and Nebula are, like, low-key in pursuit, but they get to the prison, and then they cleanse the prison. Meanwhile, Yondu is apparently really collects figurines. That's adorable. And they go to see the Broker. And, yeah. The Broker's fine. We see him later in the movie, but it was just like, where did Peter go? What is Peter after? What does Peter have? He's got that hot arrow thing.
Oh, yeah. That arrow is awesome.
But the buyer, the funny thing is the buyer that the Broker had is the same buyer that Gamora has, the Collector. So anyway, they go to Nowhere, which is an actual place. Nowhere is a place.
And Nowhere is spelled with a K at the beginning. It is K-N-O-W-H-R-E.
Yes, yes.
Not Nowhere as in, like, N-W.
Yeah.
Or N-O-W-H-R-E-R, or whatever. I can't spell anymore. It's been a long day.
So Nowhere. No rules. It's a mining colony, and we obviously know the collector from the after credit scene.
Never fear the Corrector.
In Thor Dark World. I'm pretty sure that's my title. And we kind of see that the Collector has, like, a slave that works for him. We see a couple of little, like, references. We see one of the Chitauri in a glass case. We see Cosmo, the Soviet space dog.
We see somebody impersonating David Cross as one of the Blue Man Group people.
Yeah, there's that.
Which is a Arrested Development reference, because James Gunn is a huge fan of Arrested Development. And I think some of the his co-writer was actually one of the writers for the show.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
So Quill talk as they land on Nowhere, Quill talks about how he's from a planet of outlaws. Billy the Kid, Bonnie and Clyde, and John Stamos. If John Stamos is an outlaw, then we are all doomed.
I wonder how John Stamos was an outlaw. Like, was he an
John Stamos doing in the 80s, other than like
when did Full House start? Because I always remembered Full House as an early 90s show. All right, I'm looking it up right now.
All right, I'll keep talking about the fabulous career of John Stamos that exists. I don't know.
Full House started in 1987.
Okay, so Peter would have at least seen the first season of Full House before he had been kidnapped. Looking at his credits, though.
Oh, here you go. This would be another reason why. He apparently starred in a movie called Never Too Young to Die in 1986. He was also in a TV show called Dreams in 1984.
I guess one of these things will make him an outlaw. But anyway, Like I said, Peter's just mainly here to make references. I'm pretty sure that's in his job description. Make references. So Groot gives little girl a flower, which was really cute, and they go to a bar and wait for somebody who works for the collector to come and talk to them. Peter and Gamora kind of go and do their own thing. They talk about, like, dancing, and Quill kind of tries to flirt with Gamora. They kind of share a very intimate moment, and then she accuses him of performing pelvic sorcery because he tells her the legend of Footloose. Meanwhile, Drax, Groot, and Rocket are getting pretty shit-faced at this point. And Rocket is a really sad drunk. And like I said, he's like a puppy. You just kind of want to hold him and pet him and tell him everything's going to be okay.
And while Quill's trying to hit on Gamora and failing, they end up seeing the fight break out between Rocket and Drax.
Yep.
And literally have to save the day.
And Quill is like the voice of reason. He's like, remember, we're all about to be rich. So like, come on. And then Karina, the girl who works for the collector, comes in and takes them to Hamasta. So the collector is like, oh my God, he's so creepy.
And played so well by Benicio del Toro.
Oh, that dude is having so much fun.
Take a look at this. He got to do the collector. And he got to play that that master cracker, like code cracker guy or locksmith in the second of the trilogy for Star Wars.
I don't remember everybody he that was in Star
no, no,
Wars.
But the thing, it's the second to last one that they did, episode 8. Yeah. And the way he did his character in that one was like almost similar to the way he did the collector, except he did it with a stutter. It was actually really, it was actually kind of enjoyable watching Benicio del Toro do his thing.
So the scene within the collector's like trophy room or whatever you want to call it is really interesting for a couple of reasons. One being that this is the first time we actually get an explanation for what the Infinity Stones are. That there are these like things that existed at the beginning of the universe and whatnot, and they all have different powers. We see the Tesseract, we see the Aether, and we see a couple of other colors, but they're kind of vague because Disney and Marvel hadn't quite figured out where the other Infinity Stones were going to show up and how and whatnot.
Well, they figured out
they knew about the Mind Stone.
Well, no, they figured out where they're going to show up. They just never revealed where they're going to show up yet.
Tomato, tomato. As the collector's talking, the girl decides that she wants the Power Stone, even though, like, the collector clearly says that, like, normal people can't wield it, even the six people that, like, held it together died in the process or whatever. So everything goes kaboom. Cosmo, the space dog, is saved.
Well, we don't know that yet. until
we do because he runs out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he runs out. Yeah.
So then they're like, okay, crap, what do we do now with this? And Gamora says, well, there's an obvious answer. We need to take the stone to the Nova Corps. And Rocky's just like, oh, why do we have to do this? This isn't our responsibility. Like, why do you want to save the galaxy? And I love this line. So it's like, why the hell would you want to save the galaxy anyway? And Peter says, because I'm one of the idiots living in it. And yep. I love the fact that, like, these are not superheroes. They're not, they don't want to have to do the right thing, but they live in this universe and it's going to get destroyed. So if they have the power to do something, they might as well do it, no matter how big of losers they are.
You know what that sounds like to me? It sounds like what we're having to go through right now. Nobody wants to do wants to be the hero, but we all have to do our part.
And stay in quarantine.
And stay in quarantine. Well, except for my dumbass, because I wouldn't say I'm really a dumbass for this, but I just have a job that where I'm an essential employee that has to go into the office every day.
And I get to work from home.
My job, you can't do that. The type of job that I do, it actually requires me to be in the office, but we're working with a skeleton crew in the office. It's literally me and the office manager.
I get that.
So it's not as bad.
That's good.
But to that point, you know, it's like, you know, it's kind of like what we have to do. Just make sure everybody washes your hands. The Guardians don't have to worry about washing their hands on this one.
We don't need to talk about all the, like, fictional.
I know, I'm making a joke. Come on. Just roll with the jokes. Somebody's laughing.
If they were funny, I would.
Oh, my heart just broke on that.
Oh, please.
Our -6 listeners are laughing right now.
See, now it's funny. So
could you imagine, even though I know Nerdy Notions is technically on the wait list for AwesomeCon, which is now in December, which we'll talk more about later when we do the social medias and promotions and stuff. How funny would it be if somebody actually we make the joke about, oh yeah, our -6 listeners, and somebody goes into the panel room and literally walks out and takes 6 chairs with them.
That would be hilarious. That would be beautiful. So it turns out that while Gamora and the gang was meeting with the Collector, Drax called Ronan, because that was smart.
Drax doing Drax things.
So what ends up happening is the Ravagers and Ronan show up at the same time.
It's a cluster mess.
Let's see. There's some creative fighting. There's that whole thing where they get into these like mech suits that are industrial, and there's like they're in space, and basically everything they get away. Peter saves Gamora. Nebula and Gamora are not quite sisters. Like they have the same shitty adopted dad, basically. Ronan throws Drax into a thing of creepy liquid. Quill makes a deal with calls the Ravagers.
To essentially save him and Gamora.
Yes. Groot saves Drax. Groot convinces Rocket to rescue Peter and Gamora from the Ravagers.
Which forces Rocket to get very angry and starts kicking grass. And he goes, look at me. You're making me so angry, I'm kicking grass.
Yep. So Ronan has Nebula on his side, so I guess that's going for him, because honestly, like, Nebula will do anything to screw up dear old dad, and yeah. Except the rational thing, which is team up with Gamora. We'll get to that. So they plan to kill Thanos. Yondu... That was my door being closed.
Are you being too loud? Or are they being too loud?
Nah, it can't be me.
Oh, okay.
So Gamora tells Yondu that they have to warn Xandar because Ronan gets the stone during all of this and he's about to destroy Xandar. So Rocket shows up to rescue Quill and Gamora and is basically like, give them to me now or I blow up ship in 5, 4, 3, 2, Rocket, no, we're fine now. So they essentially make a deal that if Yondu helps him, then the Ravagers can have the stone when they defeat Ronan. That'll work out. Quill has a plan to stop Ronan. He has 12% of a plan.
Yeah, and this is during the little team meeting amongst the Guardians.
Yep.
Before they're actually officially the Guardians.
They're not yet.
Yeah, they're not yet, but yeah.
They're still the island of misfit assholes. The spaceship of misfit assholes. That should be the.
I can't make that the actual title of the episode because it has to go on the online.
The spaceship of misfit morons.
What do I have this episode title as? Give me one moment, please. I've already labeled what the episode's going to be called. It's actually on the website, and gotta go to the archive. This episode is called "Getting Groovy with the Guardians."
I like my title better.
Well, keep in mind, I also went with "Getting Groovy with the Guardians" because of all the music.
That's fair. We'll talk about the soundtrack.
Oh yeah, it's a great soundtrack.
It really is. So basically, he rallies everybody to give a shit. And so then you have, like, speaking of soundtracks, Cherry Bomb by The Runaways starts playing. And it's a good plan. So they call Peter calls the Nova Corps.
Well, actually, before they get to that, there's a moment where they all say, yes, we agree, and they stand up as they say it. Yeah. And Rocket's like, do I really need to stand? And then he goes, all right, fine. I'm standing. Look at us. We're all just a bunch of jackasses standing here. Again, Rocket has some of the best lines in the entire movie.
He really does, though. So Peter calls the Nova Corps and on Xandar and that Ronan is coming. The Ravager ships are deployed. And so Quill calls the one guy who was making all of the explanations about who they were in the beginning. And so this guy goes to Nova Prime and says, you know, I just got this message from Peter Quill. And he's like, you know,
John C. Reilly's character.
Yeah, and basically, and Nova Prime is like, do you trust him? He goes, well, he did say that, like, you know, he was an asshole, but he wasn't, and I'm speaking directly here, 100% a dick.
I love that so much.
So at the beginning, Rocket basically goes after Ronan's ship, and they blast the crap out of it. And then the Nova Corps shows up. So the Nova also evacuates people, and then comes to help. And this guy who was like, oh, they're just a bunch of a-holes, says, I was against you, prove me wrong. Which is kind of nice, I think. Like, he's honest, but he's also like, prove me wrong. So Gamora and Peter and Drax make it inside Ronan's ship. And Gamora's like, this is just like Kevin Bacon. So then the Nova, like, all connect because they're on these, like, weird starry ships, and they kind of make, like, a barrier shield thing around Ronan's ship.
Which is actually pretty cool.
It's a good light show.
But I like how as it's going around the ship, it's actually forming around it. It's not like, you know how, like, if they try doing something like that.
Yeah, it's not a plane shield. It's a wraparound shield.
Yeah, it's a wraparound. And it literally flexes itself around and it conforms. That's the word I was looking for. It actually conforms to the shape of the ship that they're going around.
So Groot lights the way because they're in this room and it's dark. And Drax makes a comment like, huh, you've never done that before. When did you learn how to do that? Which is a reference to the fact that that's not a thing that Groot has ever done. But hey, in the comics too.
Yeah, but I also like how this scene also kind of goes... Like, Drax is going on about how he's happy, how he's proud to be with them. And he goes, like, you know, this tree, he is my friend. Quill, you are my friend. Rocket's not there because he's fighting on a ship. Right.
So as this is going on, Ronan had deployed a whole bunch of, like, little pods of psychos. Or his, like,
minions.
Minions, yeah, we'll go with minions. Acolytes, that's the word I was looking for. Yes.
Minions works too.
They end up becoming the domestic. They're the ones that are keeping these pods. The Ravagers are the ones that are keeping them from attacking Xandar. They're like blasting them everywhere.
Yeah, but then the line comes up where Drax goes, and this green whore, and then it's like enough, you know, because he was going to say that that Gamora was his friend too, but you know, Drax being as literal as he is,
gets
shut down.
So Nebula shows up and there's a fight and she kind of gets blown out of the way. Yondu is captured by Ronan's forces.
Was he really captured, though?
Sort of, like Loki.
He was more surrounded than captured.
Okay, fine. So he was surrounded by Ronan's forces, and he uses his little arrow thingy to kill them all. It was pretty cool, actually. It's a nice visual.
It's also the first real time we got to see it in action. I know we got to see it with the Broker.
Yeah, but he didn't really use it. It was more.
He didn't really use it. It was just more of a way to like set the tone.
And he also used it on Peter briefly, but it didn't go that far.
Yeah, exactly. It set the tone of what he can do with it and how he can control it. But then when you really see what he does when he's surrounded, I mean, the thing took out a ship.
Yeah. So Rocket's calling the shots on saving people. Xandar's getting hit hard. The Nova Corps gets destroyed. One gets blown up, they all get blown up, which is really devastating. Like, poor Nova's never stood a chance. And Ronan's ship starts crashing towards Earth. Gamora tries to reach Nebula after she, like, falls, and Nebula just, like, cuts off her arm, basically, and just, like, jumps on the ship, throws the Ravager out, and just, like, leaves. Quill can't destroy Ronan because so Quill tries to to kill Ronan, and it doesn't actually work because Ronan has the power of the stone. And then he almost kills Drax. Rocket flies in the ship as it's hurling, basically. So they're all together now, and Groot basically saves them all because he like creates this like bubble of treenessness.
He pretty much created a hardened cocoon.
Yeah, that word.
Yeah.
As the ship crashes into Xandar, Groot is dead.
Aww.
Obviously not, because then later on Rocket gets like a stick and puts it in a pod and boom, baby Groot.
But as it's been revealed by James Gunn recently, it's a different iteration of Groot. It's not the same Groot.
Yes, it's not quite the same Groot.
So.
So Ronan is alive. He blasts Rocket, and the guard. And then there's something aligned. I think this happens slightly later, but when he's talking to, when Ronan and Quill are talking to us, he goes, because we're the freaking Guardians of the Galaxy. But.
Well, no. So what happened was, is that after the crash happened and they're like, did we get him? You know, and you see him come and you see Ronan walking out of the smoke. They're just like, they're like a little disappointed. And Ronan is addressing the crowd, not the Guardians, but the crowd, going, look at your failed Guardians of the Galaxy. And then, and then as he's getting ready to try to do the thing, you can hear Ooh Child playing in the background, and Quill
starts dancing.
And the guy's like, what are you doing? It's like, dance off, bro. Let's do this. And he tries to pass it off to Gamora. Gamora's confused.
And then he starts singing.
Like,
and he ends up being the distraction. Rocket shoots at Ronan, and Rocket shoots at the hammer.
No, Rocket fixes the gun that they used on the ship because it got damaged in the crash. Drax is the one who shot the gun at the hammer.
So the gun is shot. Who shot first? There's your Star Wars reference. You're welcome. So it destroys the like hold of the hammer, and it releases the Infinity Stone inside, and Quill grabs for it. But as we learn from the Collector, one person can't just wield the stone. It's too powerful. It's literal power. So eventually they all like join hands and wield the stone together, basically.
But one of the key moments, though, is the very beginning part. After he's there, he finally stabilizes his stance. Mm-hmm. And Gamora's like, take my hand, Peter.
Yes.
And the flashback to his
parallel
mother.
Parallel to his mother.
Yeah. Which then creates the chain events of, you know, first Gamora, then Drax, then Rocket, and then Ronan's like, wait, how are you able to do this? To which Peter,
the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Bitch.
So they destroy Ronan and hide, and Peter takes the stone. Yondu.
Yondu
wants it. So Peter gives it to him because that's part of the deal. And he tells him, but you know, obviously you can't open it because it's really powerful, as you just saw. And so as the Ravagers leave, Sean Gunn's character turns to Yondu and says, aren't you glad we didn't... So Yondu has the stone, or so he thinks. They get back on the ship, and Sean Gunn's character talks to Yondu, and he's like, yeah, it was a great idea. like we're like we should have like it's a good thing that we didn't like take him to his dad like we were supposed to. Turns out Peter's a great kid and whatnot.
Yeah, and then Yondu goes like, "Yeah, his father's a jackass," you know.
Yes. So then
which of course, in the next one, we find out that apparently there's repercussions. For those comments.
There's a really cute moment where where Rocket is like sitting and he's got the pot with the stick and Drax is just like giving him pets and it's so cute.
Well, no, he doesn't have it in the pot yet. He's just holding.
Oh, he's holding the stick. You're right.
Yeah, he's just holding the twig and Drax sits down next to him and you can just see that Rocket's all depressed because he just lost his best friend in Groot. And, you know, but Drax just starts petting him on the head and like Rocket at first is like startled, but then sees it's Drax and it's like, he just accepts it. He really does. And it's just like, all right. So.
Yeah. So we find out later that the reason Quill was able to hold the stone by himself for so long is that he's not completely Terran. He's only half Terran, and that the other half is something that is very ancient, as Nova Prime says. So basically, the Guardians are thanked for, you know, helping to save Xandar. They're given a new ship. They're given a full pardon. There's a funny bit about like, well, what if I want to see Rocket's like, well, what if I want to steal something, but it belongs to somebody else? It's like, well, that's theft and that's legal. It's like, but what if I want it more? And Drax is like, wait, so if somebody offends me, can I like just be, you know,
rip stab their, well, no. Drax's thing was like, what happens if somebody really irritates me and I rip their spine out? And John C. Reilly is just like, has this bewildered look on his face going like, that's murder. That's the worst crime you could do. It was like, and Drax is just like, okay. And he just has this look on his face like, okay, and just walks off. It was just great. And I liked how Rocket just kept arguing it. You know, it's like, no, you don't understand.
I want it more
than the other guy wants it, you know.
So Peter finally opens his mom's present, and it's a new mixtape. And then we flash to Yondu, who finally opens the orb, and there's, like, a little troll doll inside.
Yeah.
So the Novas keep the Power Stone, and Gamora calls him Star-Lord.
Which is what he's been wanting the entire time because everyone was mocking him whenever he said his name was Star-Lord.
Yep. And they kind of decide, so are we going to go do something good or something bad? And Gamora's like...
A little bit of both.
No. Well, Gamora's like, well, you call the shots, Captain. And he's like, a little bit of both. And then they blast off.
No. The line was, are we going to do something good? You want to do something bad? Or you want to do a little bit of both? Mm-hmm. And then that's when Gamora was like, what would you like to do, Star-Lord? And then he was like, all right, little bit of both.
All right, so they blast off. So the first after credit scene is Dancing Baby Groot, which is really cute. So we see that a version of Groot has survived, and it's actually very cute. And he's just, like, dancing, and then Drax looks over, and he stops dancing, and then he starts dancing again. And then, but the second after credit scene is really hilarious because unlike a lot of other after credit scenes, it doesn't really set up anything in the future seemingly. You see Cosmo the space dog has returned and he's like licking the collector
while he's drinking a margarita,
and then somebody starts talking in the background and we turned and it's Le Gasp, Howard the Duck,
voiced by Seth Green. And the line of course that he says is like, yuck, how can you let him lick you like that? That's so disgusting. And then, of course,
he's a duck.
And then it pans over to Howard, which is like, all right, so Howard's in the MCU.
Because that's the one thing we've always wanted the MCU to confirm.
Damn right. Well, Howard has always had a relationship with the Guardians in the comics. So it actually makes sense to bring Howard in as part of the Guardians of the Galaxy lore, because obviously he returns in Guardians Volume 2. He also appears briefly in Endgame, when they bring out the Ravagers, he's with the Ravagers as they come in for the battle scene. Right. And he's actually right behind the Wasp, Hope. He's actually, like, so when she shows up, he's actually kind of, like, right there. And it's hilarious because he's this little tiny duck with this really, really big gun. But there's always been that relationship, especially between Howard and Rocket. That's been the big relationship.
Yeah, he's all like, I knew all anthropomorphic animals knew each other.
So.
Or reanimated talking animals, whatever. So let's talk a little bit. This is the first movie soundtrack that made it to number one without having any original songs in it.
Yeah, so I actually have the soundtrack in front of me. If you'd like it. Would you like it?
All right, read it off. Why not?
You have Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Swede. Go All the Way by the Raspberries. Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum. Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie. Bowie. Fooled Around and Fell in Love by Elvin Bishop. I'm Not in Love by 10cc. I Want You Back by the Jackson 5 before Michael Jackson got really screwed up. Mm-hmm. Come and Get Your Love by Redbone. Cherry Bomb by the Runaways. Escape, the Pina Colada song by Rupert Holmes. Ooh Child by the Five Stair Steps. And Ain't No Mountain High Enough by Marvin Gaye.
Which is the film that plays at the end.
Yes. Now, the great thing is that, and my friend brought this up because we were listening to the soundtrack one day when we were driving out to Harper's Ferry to go hiking. And he goes, you know, I just realized this by listening to the entire soundtrack. Almost all of these songs are love songs.
So I guess this actually takes us to a lot of the message of the movie. There's a lot about family in this movie, if you think about it. There's Peter's inability to get past the death of his mother, and the fact that he's still listening to the same mixtape 26 years later.
And I wonder how many I'm actually surprised that tape is still able to play after 26 years, because how many cassette tapes have we had as children that would probably be dead within a year?
Maybe. I still have all my old ones.
I have one. And I showed it to my mom the other day because I had to go through her basement closet looking for something. And it was right there in the box that I was looking in. And it's the old tape. And it's a short one. Make Way for Ducklings.
That's cute.
Remember the little storybook, Make Way for Ducklings? So I had the audio tape.
First 9 years of my life grew up in a foreign country.
True. But yeah, it's the audio tape version of the book of Make Way for Ducklings.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it's something from my childhood.
I watched a lot more TV than listened to music as a kid.
It isn't a song.
Just in general. No, yeah. I get that. In general, like I didn't do audiobooks. I was more of the TV kid.
Oh yeah, I was more of a TV kid too. So.
Hey, those days sitting in my grandma's room in front of the television watching Power Rangers and X-Men and Spider-Man, that is the reason I became the comic book nerd that I am today. Thanks, Grandma.
Damn right.
There's a lot about family in this movie. There's like hints of the relationship between the Collector and Karina, who is actually his daughter in the comics, but that wasn't really like the point or anything. It's a lot about familial relationships. The Guardians of the Galaxy, over the course of the movie, go from people who absolutely detest each other and have nothing in common to becoming a real family. And then you have all of this juxtaposed with Gamora's relationship with her sister Nebula, a relationship the culmination of which we will see in Endgame. And of course, in the sequel, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Volume 2. So that part is amazing. Chris Pratt was absolutely perfect for this role. I think when James Gunn initially saw him, he was like, he didn't really want to see him, but when he did, he was like, oh man, this is the guy that has to play Star-Lord.
And then at the same time, like, this was also a thing that also redefined Chris Pratt, because originally he was just on, what was it, Parks and Recreation, I believe?
I think that's what it was.
I think
it was Parks and Rec.
Yeah, I think so too, but I actually have the, it was Parks and Recreation, where he played Andy Dwyer. But as a lot of people remember, when he did that show, he was like he was overweight, you know, he was kind of like the fat joke of the show and stuff like that. And this, getting the role for this film, really transformed him
mentally and physically.
Yeah, both mentally and physically. And that's great.
Because, so the thing is like, James Gunn, this is what I read on IMDb, that James Gunn originally, like, wanted Peter as is, or wanted Chris to play him as he was. And he was like, no, give me 6 months to get in shape. And I guess it was very rigorous, but Chris was very happy with the result and was really proud of himself and, like, good for him.
Well, not only that, but the other thing is I also think Disney was like, no, we kind of want him in shape a bit and stuff like that. So, because Disney, as we learn more about how things work with the Marvel Studios, Disney sends actual trainers to these actors to get them in shape for their roles, except for maybe Mark Ruffalo. Because he doesn't have to. If you've ever seen the stream of photos with the meme, it was like it shows them like all the actors like Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, and it's like it shows them before they took on the roles in Marvel and what they look like now, and it was like before Thor, after Thor, and it's just except for Mark Ruffalo, he was the only one who had the same body type both times. So, but the thing is though, is that was one of the key things is that Disney hires these personal trainers and nutritionists and all this other stuff to get these actors in shape to do these films.
Yep.
And that was one of the things that happened with Chris Pratt too.
And, the results are good. We do see him shirtless. So. So this is funny because during the first two phases, there were things that I called the obligatory shirtless scenes, because it seemed like there was at least one shirtless scene from, like, Thor 1 to Captain America, the first Avenger, and on and on and on. So, thanks for that, Marvel. Thanks, Disney. So there's a lot of, like, familial relations going on. There's a lot of this, like, the becoming a chosen family thing going on. And there's this concept of, like, who... I think part of the movie is the struggle of Peter realizing who he is. Because I don't... Like, at first he's just a kid, and then he's, like, in the shadow of the Ravagers, and this kid that, like, got kidnapped, you know, from his home planet. And now he learns, like, the concept of Peter's identity is something that's going to carry us into Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yep.
But... The movie's fun. It's got good energy. It was hilarious. People loved it because, like I said, and I will say it again, this is the spaceship of misfit assholes. Because they're all assholes in different ways. Groot doesn't listen. Rocket has a mouth on him. Drax takes things too literally and is only focused on one very specific thing. Gamora is a literal assassin and is probably the smartest out of everybody. And then there's Peter.
And then, wow, that's like... Like that could be like a song. Like what's that? Oh, and then there's Maude. Cause remember how like the intro, they did this on Family Guy where Peter was like super excited that they did the extended version of the intro for that Maude show. And it said, oh, Susan B. Anthony. And then whatever about Susan B. Anthony. And then eventually you got to, and then there's Maude. And it's like, that's what you just did. It's like, there's Drax and blah, blah, blah. There's Gamora, blah, blah, blah. And then there's Peter.
Peter is a character that, like, really struggles with loss. And I think it goes back to the fact that he had, like, if you think about it, like, because they hint at it in the movie that, like, Yondu kept talking about how, like, his entire life, how, like, the other Ravagers wanted to eat him because they'd never tasted Terran before, and Yondu talked them out of it. Like, that's a lot of trauma. Like, that's scary to put on a kid who's, like, freaking out because he's on an alien spaceship. I'm like, so Peter probably has some lot of trauma that he's dealing with. Groot was voiced by Vin Diesel, and Vin Diesel, first of all, recorded that line, like, I am Groot, like, 1,000 times, but he also did it in a lot of different languages. So no matter which country and which language you watch this movie, Groot is always voiced by Vin Diesel.
Which is actually really cool. And the funny thing is that it's not that he just went in and recorded it, like, he just recorded the line one time. He went in and he did it in all these different variations of, like, anger happening.
There's different emotions. There's an angry, or I am Groot, an annoyed,
And it's really cool. And actually something we end up learning going into Volume 2 and Infinity War and Endgame is that Vin Diesel also voices Baby Groot and Teenage Groot, and he actually does manipulate his voice himself. It's not like auto-tune or anything like that. There's no audio work. That is him making his voice sound like a Baby Groot.
And that is the magic that is Vin Diesel.
Like, you don't think that when you see Vin Diesel, though. You always think of him as the big tough guy from the Fast and the Furious series.
Granted, I watched The Pacifier, so...
And then also, obviously, he has the movie that just came out recently, Bloodshot, which is comic book based.
And apparently bombed.
I don't think people wanted to see Vin Diesel as Bloodshot, to be honestly. I think more people wanted to see Jason David Frank be Bloodshot. Because what happened was is that Valiant was actually doing their own stuff independently with Bat in the Sun. And if you've ever seen like the Bat in the Sun, like Batman versus the White Ranger or something like that.
Yeah,
they always do like those where they take real actors, and like Jason David Frank has done a few of those as the Green Ranger and as the White Ranger. They actually casted him to be Bloodshot for their little mini stuff.
I'm guessing that got the fans hyped, and the studio that made the film was like, oh, he's not a big enough name, we don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And Vin Diesel was, but to the credit of Vin Diesel, at least, is that he's also a fan of the comic books. So just like how Jason David Frank was, which is why Jason did it for Bat in the Sun as Bloodshot for their little Valiant universe that they did. And because John Morrison from the WWE was Ninjak. Because it was like Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. That's what it was. And so that's why people really wanted to see Jason David Frank, because they loved what he did in that.
Gotcha.
And that's why. But then also Vin Diesel also does Riddick, The Chronicles of Riddick.
Oh.
So, and that's where a lot of people know that him from as well. Which, is that comic book based or is that actually book based?
No idea. I think it's, I want to say it's a book, but I'm probably wrong. It's not my thing. Bradley Cooper, I think, joked at one point, or I don't know if this is true, but he said something along the lines of like how he got paid more for this film and doing voice work than he did for Silver Linings Playbook, which given the budget, I can believe that. Like, Bradley Cooper just sounds like he's having so much fun voicing Groot. Like,
Rocket. Well, I mean, he gets to be a literal asshole. Who wouldn't have fun doing that?
Not Jared Leto.
But still, though, who wouldn't have fun just voicing an asshole?
This is true. Yeah. I want to voice an asshole.
Just not a literal asshole, but no. Somebody who is an asshole.
Obviously. Like, you really need that explained?
You could be Drax. You could be literal.
So going back to what I said in the beginning, this movie was a risk. There was no guarantee that this was going to be successful, and this was like testing the waters. Can we do things that are out there, and have we established ourselves as an industry, as a cinematic universe that people will go see the things that we do?
I think also on top of that is that this was also the beginning of where they knew that they needed to introduce other characters, because at the same time, they knew that Phase 3 was going to be the end of this massive saga. And they couldn't just have a war where you just have Captain America, Tony Stark, Thor, Black Widow, Hawkeye, and Hulk. You needed to bring in, you know, and their friends, obviously. You needed to bring more in to make it more a grander scale, which is why you get Guardians, which is why you bring in Ant-Man and the Wasp and, you know, Wakanda with Black Panther and stuff like that. It expands the universe so much more, especially the fact that when you eventually get to Captain Marvel, you know, which my mom is actually watching the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the so-called timeline order, where it starts with Captain America: First Avenger, followed by Captain Marvel, followed by Iron Man and Iron Man 2 and stuff like that. So my mom's watching it in that order. So technically speaking, if you watch it in that order, yeah. Technically speaking, Captain Marvel is the one that introduces the galaxy to you in a shorter way, in a smaller way, but not as vastly as the way Guardians of the Galaxy does.
Well, I think part of the things, and we'll talk about this more with the Captain Marvel review, is that 90% of the Captain Marvel movie takes place on Earth. Get it? 90%? Huh? Yeah.
But it also, but you do get that 10% of the Kree. It explains, I'm going to mispronounce this dude's name, but he's a hell of an actor though. Oh, here it is. Jimon Hunsu. Because he played Korath. He was the black guy with the metal in his head where Drax just ripped it that killed him. You actually see him in Captain Marvel, and it's actually like the precursor to him. It's actually also the precursor for Ronan going into this film for Guardians. So yep. It makes sense why they have that. It's also based in the 1990s, which, again, when we talk about soundtracks, amazing soundtrack right there. But Guardians was the way to expand to more than how Captain Marvel did, but Guardians was a way of expanding the universe because it also made things make more sense once they started bringing Thanos in Infinity War and all the hopping around that they do.
And this is the first time that we actually get a little bit more context for who Thanos is. Because again, at this point in the Marvel universe, as we as fans know it, because we're in 2014 right now, that Thanos has only been a man we saw in a really brief cameo at the very, very end of the Avengers. And we have no clue, like the average moviegoer doesn't have any clue who he is or what he's about or like, what's the point of him. So we do get a little bit more about him that, like, he's a, like, we knew he was a bad guy, but, like, we kind of get the sense that he's a really bad guy.
Yeah, because, like, in the first Avengers, you get a little tease of him, which at the time, that wasn't Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin came in.
For Guardians.
Starting at Guardians, that's when it became strictly Josh Brolin in the character of Thanos. So you got the glimpse of him because he actually didn't talk in Avengers in that end credit scene.
Yep.
But then when Josh Brolin took over in Guardians, that's when Thanos started talking and really, really started to flesh out and define the character.
Yes. So we also get the introduction to Nebula, who is actually in the comics is very important in defeating Thanos during the Infinity Saga.
Which in the Infinity Saga in the comics, she's actually the ultimate villain.
Anyway.
Because she takes the gauntlet for herself.
Hey, everybody has their own agenda. Like, we'll find this out when we get to Civil War. And so I guess like the last few things is like the movie itself was commercially successful. People loved it. The soundtrack was, like I said, number one, which again is pretty amazing for a movie soundtrack in general. But it's just funny because it's like none of these songs are original. These are songs that have been around since the 80s. And yet.
Even longer than the 80s.
Like even longer than the 80s. It's like, you know, how Wayne's World was a revival for Bohemian Rhapsody. It's very similar, just with way more songs.
But also, to bring up the commercial success, like, I throw this out there because it's a good example of things. Like, my dad is not a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He doesn't, you know, in a way, he just doesn't get it because comics have never been his thing like it is for us. But he loves Guardians of the Galaxy. He loves Rocket, you know? So, and he loves Groot. So it's like for him, like, and that's where some of that commercial success comes in, is because there's characters that aren't overused and overexposed like Rocket and Groot and Quill and Drax and Gamora, they're not overexposed. Whereas like Captain America is overexposed. Batman, you know, even though that's DC, is overexposed. You know, and Superman's overexposed. So like I
can never do Batman right.
Yeah. What?
I said they can never get Batman right.
Well, no. Burton did Batman right. Nolan did Batman right.
Nolan did not do Batman right.
It depends on the type of comics and stuff like that that they're basing things off of. Because all the comics are also different, too. Because there's always different interpretations.
We could just do an entire segment episode of just whining about all of the terrible Batman portrayals.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that, you know, going back to the thing about my dad and Groot and Rocket, mm-hmm. I think that was a big reason for the commercial success because there was more curiosity to it because nobody knew who they were. And when you bring something out there that isn't overexposed or doesn't get the exposure that it usually does, sometimes it can relate to better success because, I mean, look at Ant-Man. When we get to Ant-Man in 2 episodes.
This also demonstrates what I see is like this is like, I think where whiny fanboys showed up, like started becoming mainstream aside from like Reddit sites. Whereas like, this is like the continuation of the Chris saga where like, oh, this guy, Chris Pratt can't play a superhero. Like, because people only knew him from Parks and Rec. And after like the success of Chris Hemsworth as Thor and Chris Evans as Captain America, they really should have just shut up. But no, fanboys be fanboys. And so again, you have people who I remember going, okay, so they cast Chris Pratt. I didn't know anything about him. I was like, okay, I'll wait till see what happens.
Yeah.
And when the first image came in, I was like, oh damn. Because I looked up photos of Chris Pratt, and I was like, huh, okay, this is an odd choice, but we'll see what happens. And then the first image came out, which was of that shirtless Quill scene. That was, like, the first image I remember seeing. And I was like, he looks like a superhero. And I think that, like, people will forever be whining about castings. Like, oh, my God, stop.
They always will. And here's the thing also. Here's an interesting tidbit. I noticed this when I was looking at the thing. 2014 is when Guardians of the Galaxy came out.
Yeah.
What other movie came out in 2014? Not superhero movie. It is an animated film, though. I'll give you a hint. Everything is awesome.
The Lego movie?
Mm-hmm. And who voices the main character in Lego movie? Chris Pratt. Yeah. So Chris Pratt ended up having 2 big films come out that year. In 2014, one for voice acting with the Lego movie, and then Guardians.
Well, there you go. I think since then he's been doing okay. He did like the Jurassic Park films.
The Jurassic World films. He's actually doing the last one right now.
And this is something I'm going to touch upon a little bit more when we get to Age of Ultron. But I think one of the things that Marvel does that is amazing is that for some people, it's not just a defining moment of their career, it is the thing that turns their career around. This happens with Robert Downey Jr. You see an uptick in their careers, like for Hemsworth and for Pratt. And you could make the argument for either one of those for Chris Evans, but...
Yeah, because Chris Evans was still struggling a little bit, especially after the failed Fantastic Four films.
Yeah, and he was kind of like, oh, like, we talked about this when the first Captain America movie came out, that like, oh, he's a loser, like, oh, he's Johnny Storm, oh, he can't act like Captain America, and then it's like, now we can't picture anybody else ever being Captain America other than Chris Evans. I mean, of course, one day they will be, but...
Yeah, and not only that, but this also... And we talked about this at the beginning of the episode. This was the turning point for Dave Bautista.
Yep.
You know, because this, you know, got him into 007 as a villain, as a Bond villain. It's gotten him into other films like Stuber, which
I would say that this is not the turn for Bautista and a couple others. I would say this isn't the turning point. I think this is the maker. This is the thing that sets their career on fire.
Yeah.
And so this is what happened with Evans. This is what happens with Pratt. This is what happens with Bautista. And this is what happens to a lot of other unknown actors that start.
And actually one that also it kind of helped, even though she was already kind of a big name because of Doctor Who, Karen Gillan, who played Nebula. Because everyone had just known her from Doctor Who. And then she ends up doing Guardians of the Galaxy as Nebula. And then that leads into her doing, you know, the Jumanji films. At, you know, with The Rock and
Chris. Yeah, that was a surprisingly a fun movie.
Next Level just came out on Blu-ray, and I saw that in theaters. It's so great. I love the fact that, you know, I know we're sidetracking real quick. I love it seeing The Rock trying to act like Danny DeVito and Danny Glover trying to act like Kevin Hart. It is the most hilarious thing in the world.
But yeah, so final notes.
Oh no, Kevin Hart trying to act like Danny Glover. My bad. I reversed it.
You're fine. So with that, we end kind of like the movies that turn, speaking of turning things around. So we said this last time, but Winter Soldier and Guardians are the ones that kind of turn the MCU around. And so far, everything's kind of, so we had like two, we had like one movie, one movie, and then we had two movies that were amazing. They were fun. They had great stories. The writing was on point. The acting was incredible. And so everybody's kind of like, it's 2014. We're doing well. We're riding this high. And then Age of Ultron happens.
But then Ant-Man happens.
So phase two is kind of like the roller coaster, I think, of the three phases.
Yeah, and not only that, but when we get into the next episode, when we talk about Age of Ultron, there is a legitimate conversation to be had about why it wasn't the last one in the phase. Because obviously phase one ended with the Avengers. Phase two ends with Ant-Man, and phase three ends with Spider-Man Far From Home. And there's a logistical reason as to why, but we'll explain that on the next episode when we talk about Age of Ultron, because it more directs into that and not Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm actually really excited to tackle Age of Ultron. I think it's a mixed feeling movie for me for a lot of reasons, and we'll get into that next time.
Yep. So with that, super quick. Per the IMDb, Guardians of the Galaxy was 2 hours and 1 minute and was an 8 out of 10. Which, if I remember right, was actually rated higher than Winter Soldier. Yeah, Winter Soldier was a 7.7 out of 10.
So, I mean, sometimes people are wrong. This is one of those moments.
Wait till we get three episodes later when we talk about Civil War, because that's how many episodes we are away from that one. We can record two more episodes, and then we get to do the beginning of phase three.
Oh, God. Phase three. All right. I think this is as good a place as any to...
Start the wrap. So, with that... I alluded to at the beginning about AwesomeCon. I think this is a good time to talk about it because obviously you had panel announcements. I had panel announcement with one waiting in the wings, which is obviously this show. AwesomeCon, and we are recording today on March 25th. Today, AwesomeCon officially announced that they have rescheduled the convention from May 1st through 3rd to December 11th through 13th, which is 2 weeks before Christmas, which means we're going to get a lot of Christmas cosplays.
Oh, no. Oh, please, no.
Oh, yeah, it's happening. Like, I'm saying it sarcastically. I'm not overly excited about it myself either, but it's just the reality of it. Yeah. But the thing is, though, is that means... we're going to hold off on our convention announcements for AwesomeCon for panels because our panels now have to get rescheduled. We've already confirmed that, yes, we can do that weekend in December for our panels. It's just a matter of, like, for instance, Awesome Mania, I can openly talk about it. Awesome Mania was slated for Friday, May 1st from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m.
Yeah, but because not everybody might be able to make those December dates, the panels are confirmed. The timing of them will obviously be announced later.
So for like Awesome Mania, we could take our 2 hours and move it to Saturday. You're just like, no, you don't, you, because she's like, no, it's like,
you can't have Saturday.
Listen, okay, full exposure here. Ben and I have been wanting a Saturday for years because we're always on Friday. We're always on Friday and we draw nicely. And actually we found out through the program. Have you ever looked at the panelist manual that they gave us when they confirmed our times and stuff like that for the, for our panels?
No.
They actually gave it to you and they let you know, like for the panel room that you're in, they tell you how many people can sit that can be seated per room.
Oh no, that I did see.
Yeah. So for the panel room that Ben and I are in for Awesome Mania, it could seat up to 500 people.
And now you wonder why you get it on Fridays.
And this is why we want it on Saturday, because we always gather around between 50 to 100. Now imagine if we can do a Saturday, we'd fill the room. You know, like, but yeah, so stay tuned. We'll announce panels. Obviously, now there's actually another convention that's going to be before AwesomeCon now, and that's DerpyCon, which is Halloween weekend. So I know I submitted my panels for that. I have something I need to give to you so you can pre-register so you can go. I'll send that to you later.
we'll work that out.
Yeah, because I have 3 free badges and I'm getting a 4th one soon, which will be my press badge. So, but yeah, so it's an interesting time right now. It stinks that we can't do AwesomeCon in May like originally planned, but in a way, it also works out for a lot of people too. Like, I know it works out for you because of your travel schedule around that time.
Oh, that would have been fine.
Yeah, but, well, yeah. I know that, but still, you wouldn't have been able to enjoy the full con because you'd only be able to do Saturday and stuff like that. Now there's a chance where you can actually get to enjoy potentially all 3 days.
Potentially. We shall see.
Yeah, the key word is potential. Yeah, but not only that, but it also lets a lot of people, like my mom who wants to go, and my friend Dixon, and several other people who weren't going to be able to make May happen, it gives them more time to now be able to plan and prepare to go to this convention as well, which is a good thing. So, but yeah, at the same time, we'll see what happens. December's a long way away from now, but yeah. So, with that, Sasha, where can the people find you on the social media?
So, as always, geekgirl101.tumblr.com and geekycaptain on Instagram. I'm still debating if I want to just take the entire Instagram public or not. We'll see, and make it all like professional and snazzy, but I don't really think I'm ready to be one of those people. We'll see.
Just be like me with my Instagram and just keep posting the articles and just don't post anything else and make everyone go, I don't want to follow this loser.
It's just going to be pictures of my cat. Like, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
And occasionally random things I see on the street.
If you're allowed like out on the street.
That was just like randomly hanging in a park. Like, it looked like a Venetian pot. And it was like, anyway.
That's also if they let you out on the street.
Yeah. Ha. This was before.
Yes, I know. And then of course, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at the Lindenbaum 75, Facebook at facebook.com/X75Productions, and of course everything for the show and everything else under X75Productions on txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions, which you can find the archive, the current episode. Feel free to comment, give us your thoughts on stuff. We do have a thing at the very bottom of every article that says, if there's something you want us to talk about, let us know.
Please listen to this. Please listen to the end.
So to our negative 6 people, let us know what you want us to talk about outside the MCU.
Yeah, imaginary friends, please become real and listen. But with all of that in mind, thank you so much to our negative six listeners. And we hope to not see you, not hear from you next time as we tackle the Age of Ultron.